are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
But again, shortstop is turned into a position where you can go sexy, you can go red carpet, you don't have to go girl next door, so to speak. So
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I quite like that pedantic venture. Yeah. So
we are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Well, hello, everyone. This unfamiliar voice as the host of this podcast on a weekly basis is Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It. This is episode 239. We don't know. We're not Justin. Justin is off and about sending cool little quippy little videos of Disneyland and what have you. I guess the second day his foot was one big blister, which was an image I didn't really per se need. But regardless of all that, I'm happy that he's getting a break because he's a hardworking fella, to say the least. And every once in a while, I love to be able to do a podcast with just my teammate on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, one, Darius. Hi, Darius. How are you? Why don't you go ahead and share where you can be reached and tell us how you are?
I'm doing well. Thank you. You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. You're very lucky to be getting me today because I apparently am unable to connect to the fact that you guys have already done your daylight savings and we haven't done ours yet, with the fact that that means the podcast will be an hour different in time. But I've made it and looking forward to chatting some baseball and, picking up some weird questions. I know you always like to throw a couple of those in.
Well, the good news is that we like to consider ourselves an educational podcast as well. And so if anyone out there is like me, which is not very internationally based, we would not have realized that you go on daylight savings time a couple weeks after us. So I would have never known that. I guess in this day and age, people who watch the NFL would be the people who knew if it happened during the NFL season, because then the times would be all screwed up when they're watching the NFL games that we now play over in England for some reason or another. But Darius and I are going to tackle kind of a large subject today, so we're not going to do too much screwing around. I wanted to go over a list of guys that we are least likely to draft that are pretty high in their positional rankings. We spend a lot of time talking about people that we like, but we don't spend that much time talking about people we don't like as far as draftable candidates. So we used this barometer. We said that we're going to pick two people, or we're going to pick two outfielders and two starting pitchers within the top 40 that we are very unlikely to draft, and we're going to pick one position player in the top 20 at each position that we're not going to draft. But before we get all serious, we should probably get some tomfoolery out of the way. I'm wondering, Darius, if you're familiar with the terminology bollocks. I think it's B-O-L-L-O-C-K-S. And if so, where do you know it from?
Well, I suppose the most famous usage would be historically is the classic Sex Pistols album title, Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols. It's a very common phrase over here. People would usually say it perhaps if they'd forgotten what time they were supposed to be doing a podcast, for example. They might say bollocks. I'm very familiar with that word.
Oh, well, that works out okay because not understanding what the words ever meant besides the Sex Pistols album, I was afraid it was something I was going to have to edit out later, because bollocks does kind of sound like something you could have to edit out later. So at least there is not that. So anyway, why don't we go ahead and start with this list, and we'll start with Darius's names first. Why don't you tell me who the catcher is that you seem least likely to end up with in drafts this year, Darius?
I went for Salvador Perez. I think I've talked a couple of times about how I'm not really a Perez fan. He doesn't walk at all, which obviously doesn't play into my interests as a guy who mostly plays in OBP leagues. I think although he does have the advantage of being on the field a lot, I don't think that really helps his production. I think he plays through injury a lot, and that doesn't really help at all in terms of his actual performance, although he gives you some extra counting stats that you might not get from most catchers. And I think he's just been trending in the wrong direction for several years now, even though he's still quite young. All of his indicators really are kind of going the wrong way. So I think he's been overused. I don't particularly like the skill set of fantasy. And I just think in this scene in fantasy where we've got basically maybe three elite catchers and then a bunch of others, I'm just going to wait and wait. And Perez goes way too high for me to think about taking him.
Well, on top of that, Darius, we have a mild injury scare that turned out to, I guess, not be an injury. But me, I had, when I saw Perez getting carried off the field with that bleached blonde Caribbean hair, I was afraid that it was Hernan Perez and it was Salvador Perez. He's not going to play in the WBC anymore, but he is, nonetheless, is going to have that image in some people's head. So that might knock him down even further. I went a little bit higher up on the list. I went with JT Realmuto, who is going as the sixth catcher overall and at the 112th pick in NFBC right now. Some things I don't like about him: he had a 357 BABIP last year, and while he is a good runner for a catcher and hits plenty of line drives, I think that's probably unsustainable long term. He's also got 8 caught stealings and 28 career attempts. And I fear with wear and tear, it's hard to count on catchers for stealing bases. I also wanted to touch on something else when it comes to the Marlins, which I'll touch on again later. That's that I'm a little concerned about the Marlins team psyche going into this year. When you replace Jose Fernandez with Edinson Volquez, and you had such an emotional leader within the Cuban community like Jose Fernandez was, I'm a little concerned about that team, and I don't like the fact that they don't have a starting pitcher to stop bad stretches of play. You know, if they lose 3 or 4 in a row, is Wei-Yin Chen going to be the stopper that gets them on the right track? It just kind of concerns me. JT Realmuto goes before Jose Bautista, before Adam Jones, before Miguel Sano, and way before Mikel Franco, and I would like all those players. Do you see my concerns about Realmuto?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think you're right about the steal being a difficult thing to sustain that position. To play devil's advocate for a bit, the one thing really interesting with Realmuto here is they keep bringing up this issue of him doing what Buster Posey does for the Giants and platooning with Justin Bour at first base quite a lot, getting some extra at-bats and save ball from face safeties. Do you buy that? Do you think they're actually going to do that in the regular season? Or do you think that's all just kind of speculation that the Marlins are never going to follow through on?
Well, they've come up with a bit of confusion within the media because they originally said that Bour was going to be able to hit. They were going to give him a chance to hit against lefties, which actually scared off some of his owners, afraid that some really bad numbers are going to pile up. Darius, are you sounding better now? I had some problems with the call there for a second.
I'm not having any problems from your end, so I don't know.
No, you got fuzzy there for a minute when we talked about when you talked back to me about Realmuto. So I was a little concerned about it, and then I got an error message on Skype, but that error message is gone now. So I'll just edit this little part out when I do it again.
Sound clear to me the whole way, so I'm not getting anything.
Okay, yeah, you sounded a little fuzzy, but I'll see what I can do about editing that out. So we'll go quiet again for a second, and then we'll start. Yeah, they definitely have sent out two different messages about between Realmuto and between Bour, because originally they said Bour was going to be able to hit against lefties, which Bour owners probably didn't want to hear because he hasn't had any success at the major league level against lefties. So, I do think that will add some to his value. I don't think it adds enough to his value for me to be excited about taking him around pick 110, which is where he's going. I think some people, you have to decide a catcher if you want to dip into the pool or you want to cut bait. I've been choosing the cut bait measure because, like some of those players I mentioned, you know, the capabilities of Bautista or a guy like Sano, if they had a really good year, are so much better than what I see in Real Muto. But if you want to get any value at catcher and you miss the first few guys, you have to decide if you're going to take one or not. And I'm just not comfortable taking catchers. Therefore, I've ended up with the Sandy Leon types and the James McCann types because I just refuse to give in to that trend at the catcher position. So we'll see if I get lucky on those guys or not. But, you know, it's not the worst pick in the world if you take Real Muto. Like I said, I just wanted to mention some stuff about the Marlins team psyche. When we move over to first base, my first baseman I'm pretty down on where he's going would be one Eric Hosmer, who's the 13th first baseman off the board at pick 105. You know, he had 80 runs scored last year. Hit 5 stolen bases. He's at a really bad home park for power. Steamer has him projected at 83 RBIs and 75 runs. And to me, it's really hard to pay that kind of a premium when I expect my first baseman to have better numbers across the board on that. Darius, what are your thoughts on Eric Hosmer this year?
Yeah, I think we've certainly been in pretty close agreement on Hosmer. I don't mind the spot so much if he's kind of going around 100th. I don't think it's too bad there. But kind of going higher than that is not anywhere that I'm even going to think about taking him. I just don't buy that he's going to make all the adjustments he needs to be a producer across the board. I think he's power or he's average. He hasn't shown the ability that he can to do both and hit 300 and get in that 25 to 30 home run range, which I think is what you want from a guy, especially at that position. And I know Mike believes in him breaking out this season and being a value. And we can forget that he's still very young because he obviously came up as I think he was 21 when he made the majors. So even though he's been around for a few years, he's kind of in a position where you might expect to step forward. But I just haven't seen him make those adjustments yet. And I think, yeah, if he's going to go kind of anywhere higher than around the hundreds or so, then there's no way I'm going to consider taking him.
All right, and who's your guy at first base that that you're going to be in avoidance of?
I'm going to go with Will Myers. I think everything was just a little bit too outlandish for me last season. It was obviously incredible fantasy going 28-28. But I'm not really buying the speed to that extent. And I think even if he drops back into kind of the 15 steal range, I think the power is taking a step back as well. And so I just think that there are a lot of different ways that this could go badly for Myers. And I don't think he's got the average to kind of back that up and give you a safe floor. So I think where he's going kind of end of the fifth round in 12 teamers at the moment, there are a lot of other guys around there that I like the safety and the upside more for.
Well, to show you where I think the San Diego Padres are as a team right now, their starting shortstop on roster resource, et cetera, is Luis Sardinas, who is basically like a piece of tumbleweed that has been on like 4 different teams in the last year. So, you know, I certainly understand on top of what you've said about him that the supporting cast could be somewhere between dismal and downright dreadful. So that adds to some of the mystery around Will Myers. You know, a lot of people got into him cheap last year, and if you could keep him for cheap, you're going to be in one of those positions where, well, I don't know how much I like him, but I feel like I have to keep him. And I'm just glad I'm not in that position because between the injuries and the poor play between his rookie year and last year, it's hard for me to get overly excited about Will Myers either. So I like your pick there a great deal. Now, how about when we go over to second base? What do you think about second basemen that just aren't doing it for you this year that are pretty highly picked?
Well, I've gone a bit kind of on the high end here, and this is not to say that I don't like the player, but I think the Trey Turner hype has gone a little bit too far for me. He's currently going 10th overall NFBC and 13.3 in the Fantasy Pros combined. So he's basically a definite kind of back end of the first rounder now. I love the upside. I think he could obviously be a huge fantasy contributor, but there's been almost no time for adjustments here. If he has any sophomore struggles, then this is going to be a severe overpay, I think. And even though, you know, I'm happy to take him as kind of maybe late second, early third round when I've those safer bats have gone. But at that price, it is just too much for me. And I think people are getting super excited about the upside and forgetting that this is the kind of pick that actually, if Turner does struggle out of the gate, this could kill your draft.
Yeah, I've actually jumped in on Turner in two drafts, which is more than I expected. But the first one was a very, very early draft. It was so early that it was, you know, before the playoffs last year. And I got him, you know, with a relative steal later than what you're talking about. And then the second time I jumped in on him was an NFBC draft. And I kind of regretted it after I did it, thinking that I kind of played into the hype and the hopefulness at the start of such a big draft of having, you know, a second baseman, a shortstop, and an outfielder, so I could adjust my draft after that. So I certainly understand the trepidation, and a lot of that comes down to how much power people think he's going to have. People that have drafted him at the national level have come out and said that they do think he's a 15 to 18 homer guy. If he only had 6 or 7 homers, you better get close to 45 or 50 steals to get first round value. So I certainly understand your trepidation about one Trey Turner out of North Carolina State. Okay, my second baseman is Dustin Pedroia, who is the 14th second baseman off the board, going around pick 142. He's 33 years old now. He's got 15 combined steals in the last 3 years. 3 of the last 5 years, he's hit around 290 or less, which batting average is sort of something you have to get out of him because he's not a home run or a steals guy. Zips and depth charts projections have him less than 56 RBIs. And his highest projection system that I've seen has him at 13 home runs. To me, this just sounds like a cut your loss kind of play. And I don't like the fact that the Boston lineup now is going to be without David Ortiz, which I don't think dismisses their players by any means. But I want the players' talent level to be exceptionally high if I have to worry about exactly what their peripheral numbers will be compared to years past. Do you share this pessimism with me about Dustin Pedroia?
Yeah, I think I do. I think especially in shallower leagues, I don't see an awful lot of reason to take Pedroia. I think he needs an absolutely massive run scored total to really be a value because, as you said, he's not going to hit a lot of home runs and there aren't a lot of steals there. And so even if he gets a little bit of bad BABIP luck, then it's just a very unexciting profile, even though he's obviously been a great player throughout the course of his career. So yeah, he was definitely somebody that I would have considered because I think there are guys who are going several rounds later than him who are basically going to provide similar value. And I don't think there's any need to reach for him just based on the name value, really.
Well, the other thing, of course, is that second base has now become a position where you can really get a stud. And in years past, you were just trying to limit your losses, which is certainly not the case anymore. So I think that factors into my dislike of Dustin Pedroia as well. Okay, when we go over to third base, at third base I have Anthony Rendon, who is a player that I've liked a lot in the past. He's going as a 10th third baseman overall and around pick 90. It's funny because he goes ahead of Bregman, and I would much rather have Bregman. But I just want to speak about the Anthony Rendon roller coaster. Well, you can either call it a roller coaster or you can call it every other year. I'm going to go through 3 different statistics over the last 4 years. Okay, the first one I'm going to start with is games played. 98 games played, 153, 80, then last year, 156. Home runs, 7 home runs, 21 home runs, 5 home runs, 20 home runs. Batting average, 265, 287, 264, 270. He's a career 274 batting average guy. I understand that he's a good hitter. I understand that he conceivably can help you in a lot of different areas, but people sort of act like his hit tool makes him, you know, a modern version of what Joe Mauer was in his prime. And a 274 batting average doesn't do that for me at all. And the risk is so heavy that he's going to be injured or he's going to be playing through an injury and he's not going to get you great statistics that I find it hard to think of Anthony Rendon right now as a top 90 player with guys like Bregman going after him. Do you think I'm off base or you agree with me about Rendon?
Yeah, I think I'm not quite as down on him, but I agree. I think the fantasy profile is not great. I think he's a guy who's maybe more valuable in real life. And I suspect if you play in a points league or one that includes slugging or doubles, something like that, then you probably a little bit more confident in his output, because I do think he's a guy who profiles a bit more of a 35-40 doubles hitter, which is a great output, but it's not going to help you an awful lot in fantasy, in certainly in terms of the raw numbers in a 5x5 league. I think the injuries are a big concern as well. This is obviously somebody who missed most of his minor league career due to injuries, and there have been several injuries since he came up to the majors as well. So I think there's a lot of risk here. I do really like the profile as an actual real-life player, because his plate discipline is excellent, and I think he gets a bump in an OBP league as well. But I think I definitely share all of your concerns there.
All right, and who's your third baseman du jour?
I think this is probably going to be about the third or fourth time that I've complained about Eduardo Nunez, which seems a bit unfair, because I think he has kind of performed basically every time he's got playing time. But I still just have doubts about his ability to do this over a full season. I think the power is coming down, especially in San Francisco. And I think the Giants have got a few different moving parts there in the infield. Certainly with Gillespie and the international signing Hwang. And so I just think there's a little bit of uncertainty there for me. And I think where he's going, I think he's 115th in NFBC, is a little bit too rich for my blood. I can't really see taking him inside the top 150. So while I think that the speed is legit, that's his calling card, it just doesn't seem like he's dropping to the kind of range where I'd be thinking about him at the moment.
I think one thing that's largely been avoided is, or not talked about, is that the Giants have a pretty horrible track record with picking up aging infielders. You know, the Freddie Sanchez, Marco Scudero, Aubrey Huff kind of players just don't really seem to be panning out all that well. Casey McGee for a brief stretch.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Casey McGee sprang to mind for me. And I hated that pit signing. And I was like, Casey McGee is not going to be playing third base for the Giants by the middle of the year. Unfortunately, they found Matt Duffy out of nowhere. These things seem to happen to the Giants quite a lot, and then they have to call up some unheralded prospect who actually does an okay job.
Yeah, they've got a bit of a Cardinals kind of luck streak in how they've overcome some of these bad signings, which is a good thing for them. But at the same time, I can't help but agree with you about Eduardo Nunez. I think that Eduardo Nunez is going to fall into the same class of the guy that I'm going to mention next, is a guy that is somewhat getting drafted a little bit higher because he's at a point in the draft where it's especially nice to get somebody who's shortstop and third base eligible. The guy I'm going to talk about is shortstop and third base eligible and also second base eligible, and that is one Jonathan Villar, who's my shortstop that I don't like, which is odd because I do own him in some leagues where I got him cheap last year, and so I get to keep him on the cheap. And it's not that I don't like him as a player. It's just, for me, for him to go overall at pick 20 with this odd combination of he was a non-pedigree kind of player, nobody really thought that much of him coming up, and he has the shortest track record of basically anyone in the top 80 picks if you add in track record and pedigree kind of thing. So also after this year, I think he's probably only a second baseman. I doubt he's going to play a lot of third this year with the way the lineup works. And I guess he would only play shortstop if perhaps there was an injury to a very young player who seems durable in Orlando Arcia. I also want to mention that very little has been made of the fact that Jonathan Villar really wore down at the end of last year. He had a .213 batting average in September. And despite everything going about as good as it possibly could have last year, he still only had 92 runs scored. And people know there's a lot of hype and a lot of questions about different people around that Brewer lineup. So I doubt that I could project him to score many more runs than that under any circumstances. The guy who comes directly after VR in the draft that I just can't fathom, to me, who's the polar opposite, is Joey Votto, is getting drafted around pick 22, two picks after VR. And I really struggle with that because I think Votto is an incredible talent with a very large amount of track record. Obviously, the glitter and the shimmer on VR is the 60-plus stolen bases from last year. But I don't like to take my first or second round pick and say that, well, I know I'm getting steals, and that's what I know I have out of him. Wouldn't stun me at all if he hit closer to 265 or 270 this year, and wouldn't stun me at all this year's OBP go down to the 315 or 320 range, which would still make him a viable steals source, but I think that he would suffer everywhere else. Do you think I'm being overly negative on my own Brewtown boy, Mr. VR?
No, I don't. I think certainly at 20, and I'm a huge Joey Votto fan, so I would definitely take him over VR, but I think that's a little bit too rich. I wonder about the power a bit. I don't know. You can speak to this better, having probably watched him play quite a lot. I don't know that 19 is really a realistic estimation of his talent. And I also wonder about those stolen bases. I know he stole 62, but he also got caught 18 times. Do you think there's any reason to expect he won't get the green light so often? Or do you think this team is just going to let him run as often as he wants to run?
Well, Craig Counsell has, by and large, been a manager that has been preaching the whole time that he was there that he wanted to have chaos on the bases. So I do trust that he's going to get a lot of green lights, and I will be stunned if he doesn't steal at least in the low 40s for bases. So I get some of the allure for sure. The thing about his power is me and Ben Brennis from the other podcast both liken his power a lot to that of Jose Reyes. He's got sort of a slashing style of power that seems hard to rely on long term, but he does play in the right park for it. So, but it certainly wouldn't stun me if he had 12 or less home runs this year. Him and Hernan Perez, I expect the power to come back to earth a little bit this year. So I certainly see where you're coming from. And who is your shortstop, my friend?
I've gone with Elvis Andrus. I think he's fine for what he is, which is a guy who can give you some average and a decent number of steals. But I just think kind of where he's going seems to me to be a function of maybe people more feeling like they need to get someone at the position, or maybe someone who's got steals and not really a reflection of his actual value. He's kind of just outside the top 150. And I think if you wait, you can either get another shortstop or somebody at another position who's going to give you similar kind of stats. And probably get them even five or six rounds later at least. So I think Andrus is a reliable contributor, but I just don't think at that kind of pick he's providing you with any real value.
Yeah, he's not a very sexy pick at all. You know, he is a guy that's likely to steal you 20 bases, which can be very important and can be very useful. But again, shortstop is turned into a position where you can go sexy. You can go red carpet. You don't have to go girl next door, so to speak. So that's where I land on Andrus as well, unless I get him very, very late, and unless I need a late source of speed. I'm not all that interested in one Elvis Andrus either. Well, why don't we start dipping into the outfield pool, my friend, and who are you looking at as your outfielders that you're lower on this year?
My first one is AJ Pollock, and this is kind of more kind of my expectation, I guess, of what kind of discount I'd get with him barely playing at all last year. I know he had an outstanding season in 2015, but he basically didn't get to play last year with the injury, and I think 2015 was his career year as well, and I just kind of expected him to go a little bit later than he is. He's the 12th outfielder off the board, and he's 34 in NFBC. And I don't feel like it bakes in quite enough the risk of him both missing those reps and the fact that he's just going to be rusty in general after missing such a huge chunk of playing time. So I don't necessarily not believe in his talent, but I think that there are definitely a few concerns there that would make me want to wait another round or two before I would think about taking Pollock.
Yeah, I think he's another guy that some people will have because they got him on the cheap a couple years ago, and they'll be hoping for a bounce back, which I don't per se blame them for. But I would also mention that if you're an Arizona Diamondback who's not named Paul Goldschmidt, your staying power has been pretty limited in recent years, meaning, you know, Ender Inciarte, David Peralta, Wellington Castillo, even Mark Trumbo, who was great when he got out of there. It just seems like there's like a black hole surrounding Paul Goldschmidt as far as consistent offensive production, which makes you wonder about their bulky Cuban outfielder as well. But per se, I can't disagree with you because I have such a hard time seeing Pollock going so early, coming off, you know, a completely lost year. Who is your other outfielder, my friend?
Mother outfield is the guy that I never seem to like, even after he led the league in home runs last year, and that's Mark Trumbo. He doesn't hit for average. He doesn't walk that much. There's no questioning that he's got power, but I think he could really end up being a one-category guy if things don't go his way. And, you know, maybe he even regresses back to like low 30s home runs. I think in runs in RBI, he could actually not end up helping you that much. The other thing with Trumbo that worries me a little bit, and Jeff Sullivan wrote an interesting thing about the new StatCast data today, is that he might be one of the worst outfielders in the majors, possibly even worse than Matt Kemp, the data was suggesting. So I think that's a concern for me. I just think the Orioles have got quite a few parts there, and with Chris Davis on the team as well, who already kind of does what Trumbo does and obviously plays first base, I think they basically don't really want him to field, and that means that they have to DH him. But I think there are other guys to get at bats there as well. So it might seem a little bit strange, but I think he might lose a few plate appearances just by virtue of the fact that he isn't a very good defender. And I think the Orioles and probably the whole of baseball, judging by how much money he actually got in the end, do know that he isn't a good defender.
Well, you know, I accidentally stumbled upon it, but he's also been a very, very streaky player in the past. He had really good stretches when he was an Angel and really bad stretches, and he had some injury issues and really bad stretches as a Diamondback. So it's pretty easy to think that regression of the dramatic variety is coming here. The people who are bolsters for Trumbo, of course, mention that the park is just about perfect for the kind of game that he has. But at the same time, you know, we don't think he has more power than Chris Davis, and we've seen pretty lofty swings in his performance playing as well. So there's something to be said for that, and I think people at least are approaching Trumbo with a certain amount of caution. Maybe people are drafting him when they think they need the power because they've looked at their team and decided they're a little short on power when they get to that area, but I'm not very likely to end up with him either. My first outfielder is one Christian Yelich, who's the 16th outfielder off the board going around pick 58. He's going in front of guys that I really like better, which include Gregory Polanco and Yoenis Cespedes. He had a .356 BABIP last year. He struck out 21% of the time. He had 78 runs and 9 stolen bases. You know, not a single projection for next year as I'm hitting more than 20 home runs. I will say that he's much better in an OBP league because he traditionally walks at least 10% of the time. And once again, he's a Marlin, so I'm not exceptionally huge on him. I'm going to cover both my outfielders, and then I'll have Darius comment on both of them at once. My other outfielder that I meant that I let Darius know I was going to talk about was one Jackie Bradley Jr., who's going as the 39th, so almost outside of the top 40, which is our parameters, and going around pick 145. I knew that he had fallen off in the second half last year, and in my research I saw that he hit .233 after the All-Star break with a .315 OBP, and this is a guy whose carrying tool throughout the minors was his plate discipline. You know, he has no speed for an outfielder. He had only 2 stolen bases after the All-Star break last year. And I have to wonder if he can get 87 RBIs and score 94 runs without David Ortiz in the lineup. When I looked at the outfielders that are going around him, it almost seems to me like there's like an outfield tier that turns into a panic, because right around him is Byron Buxton, and then comes Carlos Gomez, which I am a huge Gomez guy this year as a former number one talent, but a lot of people are scared off of Gomez because he's a bit of a head case, because he's had some bad luck with injuries over recent years. So, you know, of those three players, I kind of like Jackie Bradley the most, but he's not a guy that I want to end up with, so I'm avoiding having to draft from that tier. I see if Gomez falls a long way, and then I take him. So what are your thoughts on Yelich and JBJ?
Yeah, I think I like both of these guys more than you, although I do agree that I would take Polanco and Cespedes over Yelich. I still don't think that the spot is bad. I think that's kind of right around where I would take him. I know he hits a lot of ground balls, and that is a concern for me, but I think he's also made some adjustments in that area, and he's trending in the right direction in terms of getting the ball in the air. So I fully believe in the average. I think he's got an approach that will sustain the above average BABIP, and I think even if he's not going to get to the 21 home runs again, I think he can hit 15 to 20 and he will steal a decent number of bases. And I'm hopeful that the Marlins will be a little bit better on offense, and his OBP will let him score a lot of runs as well. So I think I'm fine with the spot, but I certainly understand where you're coming from, and he doesn't really pop off the page in anything other than average. So if something does go wrong on the BABIP front, then that could go badly. As for Bradley, I quite like Bradley, especially kind of at 39. I think that's a fine spot for him. I think he does have a little bit more interest, certainly in the power department. I think he can be a streaky player, and certainly I think he'll be more volatile than Yelich will. But I think at that cost, he provides some upside in every category. And I'm not quite so worried about the Red Sox lineup. I know Ortiz is a big loss, but I also think they have guys on that team like Bogarts, who can take another step forward and maybe make up for that. So I think I'm fine with Bradley where he's going, and I think the Red Sox will still be a pretty good offense. So hopefully the counting stats will hold up as well.
Yeah, there are two guys that, you know, they're younger players that I picked, and so it's a bit harder to gauge exactly how their performance plan is going. And so I understand some optimism. I don't hate them where they're going. I just certainly don't want to reach for them any higher than where they're going. I think this will get a little bit more interesting when we get to the starting pitchers. I'm very curious. Darius, who are the starting pitchers that you, the two starting pitchers that you thought of that you are not ending up with and don't foresee yourself having shares of in this drafting season?
Well, one that came off the page really easily to me was someone we talked about with Paul Sporer last week, and that's Rick Porcello. I just think there is absolutely no upside in where he's going. I think he's 22nd pitcher off the board, just outside the top 100 in NFBC. I think, you know, he made some really good strides last year, but the strikeouts aren't high enough. I think the ERA is going to regress. And I think, you know, even if he's maybe a 350 ERA with 180 strikeouts, that is not a number two fantasy starter. And I think there's potential that it could be worse than that as well. So I just don't see where he's going to beat that projection. And I think maybe some of the guys going around him, I know you like Tehran and Quintana. Both of those are actually guys who've had a bit more track record than Porcello in terms of being reliable fantasy. Quintana certainly extremely so. With the last several years, he's basically been the same guy every year, and Tehran, three of the four, he's basically produced a season like that. So I just think Porcello's got a little bit more risk than those guys, even though he had a stellar year, and I can't see myself taking him anywhere near that spot. I think I'd have to wait another three or four rounds before I'd think about him. As for the other guy, I really bounce this around quite a lot. Somebody I think probably I settled on is Michael Fulmer, and we've talked about Fulmer a couple of times before, and I brought him up last week as well. I just think he's basically being drafted as though he's going to replicate last year, and I think that there is going to be some struggles. He did show phases of last season in which he wasn't performing at the level to which his overall numbers came out, and I know that people see a step forward coming from him, and it was obviously an impressive debut season, but I think there's definitely potential for him to regress as well, and I don't think that's built into where he's being taken. So there's a lot of guys around him like James Paxton, Robbie Ray, even later Lance McCullers, that I think I would rather take a shot on than Fulmer.
Yeah, it's an odd thing about Fulmer, because he came out guns a-blazing for the most part. He had like three or four mediocre starts before things really started to click for him. But relatively speaking, amidst all these pitchers that have come out in recent years and initially struggled, he was actually less touted than Sean Manaea, less touted than Blake Snell, and he produced right away, which isn't completely unusual. We saw that with Jacob deGrom, you know, and Jesus Montero and other people who came out around him. But it is still sort of an oddity, because you always wonder with these guys if they can be as good as they produced right away, because they don't come from the same pedigree stock, and not as much was expected out of them. So I definitely see that. And as far as Rick Porcello is concerned, I just worry about AL East pitchers in general, and a guy who's struggled by and large in the AL Central and early on in the AL East, and this jump in production and this incredible amount of control that he showed last year just seems very, very difficult to replicate. So I'm finding it difficult for him, coming off a Cy Young-like campaign, to come anywhere as close to what he was last year. My two starters, my first one is Cole Hamels. He's 33 years old, and these peripheral stats are very, very disturbing. He's going as the 27th starter off the board, around pick number 83. First of all, his home run to fly ball rate jumped almost 3% last year, up to 14%. His xFIP was basically 4. It was 3.98 last year. He walked almost 3.5 guys per 9, with giving up over a home run per 9 innings. And these are really bad stats to put together for a pitcher. He had the second highest strand rate of his career, and his numbers still showed a serious step towards regression. Every projection that I've seen for him has his K rate going down a half a K per inning or more. So, and they see his home run rate staying the same. I don't understand with Cole Hamels what doesn't scream two things. It was his first stint in the American League. He's pitching in a very friendly park in the middle of the summer in Texas. And how about some age regression with him being 33 and leaned on so heavily when he was in Philadelphia, including the playoffs? So I really struggle with Cole Hamels going where he's going. I do not want to rely on Cole Hamels as my first or second starter in any scenario. The other person that I picked might be a bit more controversial, but my research sort of backed up what my gut was telling me, and that would be one Jake Arrieta. He's going as the 7th pitcher off the board around pick 34. He's 31 years old already, and I think that would surprise most people. I think most people think he's like a 27, 28-year-old guy because of his struggles in Baltimore. He got sort of a late start. And what I really noticed about him statistically is that his BABIP against went down, but all the other peripheral stats for him got worse last year. He's an odd guy to compare stats to because, obviously, he went through the filthiest stretch of time that we've basically seen a pitcher go through, you know, since Pedro Martinez. But at the same time, you know, after the All-Star break, he had a 3.7 ERA last year. He had 69 strikeouts in 83 innings. You would expect, you know, a guy of his stature to be right around a strikeout per inning basically all the time. He had a 4.88 and a 4.6 month after the All-Star break last year. So I believe that the Cubs have to have some regression on their team somewhere, and this seems like a likely source of it to me. I just think they've gotten a lot out of Jake Arrieta, and while I think he's good, I don't think he's close to top 7 pitcher off the board good. So what are your thoughts on Hamels and Arrieta?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. I thought people would be more down on Hamels based on all the things you mentioned, really, but it's the control that really bothers me. I think he did he got so lucky to walk that many guys in Texas and get away with the ERA that he did last year, and I think maybe people are overlooking that just a little bit. I think you're right about his age. I think he's declining a bit in that front, and I just worry that at some point, you know, he could completely fall off the table, and it was just his ERA masking the decline last year, and I'm very worried that it could be this year. So I definitely agree with that, and I think 7th is a bit too rich for Arrieta as well. One thing that I was bothered about with him is he really struggled mechanically last year, and his control got a lot worse. And he was kind of talking about ironing out this spring, but actually he doesn't seem to have done that so far. The other day he was talking about feeling like he was throwing left-handed for a few pitches, which is not a reassuring thing to hear from a right-handed pitcher. I'm concerned that those mechanical issues are not fixed, and if they aren't, then he doesn't belong in that top tier. I kind of have him at the back of that tier at the moment, but I certainly wouldn't go ahead and take him seventh. I might take him as my last sort of number one if I was desperate and I wanted to get one of those guys, but I have him behind all the Darvish, Verlander, Strasburg, Leicester group there for me, yeah.
Well, now that we've gone through everything else, we get to go through the area that people pay the most attention to, seemingly, despite the fact that it's the hardest to predict, and that would be as far as relief pitching is concerned. There's a lot of ways you could go with this, Darius. Why don't you kick us off and tell us who the relief pitcher is that you just don't see yourself drafting?
Yeah, I think sort of technically speaking, by rankings, it's Jairus Familia. Now, there are some off-the-field concerns with him, and I think that's still very unresolved. So I didn't really want to talk too much about him because I know we didn't want to do injury guys, and I think this probably falls into that category as well. So I decided ultimately to go with another guy because I didn't think Familia was appropriate, and I went with Roberto Osuna. Not really because I don't like him, but I think that the guys going around him, guys like Seung Hwan Oh and Kelvin Herrera and Ken Giles, I think have all got higher strikeout upside. And I just think he's not quite in that category of pitcher. So if I'm going to have to pay for him in that tier, then there's no way I'm going to get him. I'm just going to sit back and wait for the next group of guys who aren't in that elite, and I'll let somebody else take him at that cost.
Yeah, I certainly don't disagree with you about Osuna's peripherals, and he's also kind of in a volatile spot as far as, you know, where he's going to be closing out games in Boston and Toronto and New York. And I do like those other guys more than Osuna. I have ended up with Osuna in one of my drafts, and I guess I based it mostly off the fact that I don't really think they want to go to Joe Smith, and I don't really see a lot of other candidates jumping off the board. Years past, they had the Steve Delabar types. Even when they tried Cecil, he didn't really seem to work as a closer. So the only thing I'll say against what you're saying is they seem to be pretty loyal to the person they have in their closing role. So I think he would have to struggle mightily to do that. He's done it for a couple years now, but he's not exactly an established name. So I think it depends a lot on where the price tag goes on Osuna for how interested I would be. So I'm not quite as down on him as you are. I'll be really curious to see what your thoughts are on the closer that I'm down on, and that would be one Wade Davis, which might kind of be cheating because I guess there is an injury concern, but it's not because of a present injury to Wade Davis. This is something I knew I was going to rant about when I started writing about it, so I apologize ahead of time. But I don't understand how he goes ahead of Kelvin Herrera. Because Herrera has basically been as good or better for all of the last 3 years. And he was completely healthy last year. And I just want to mention that it doesn't make any sense to me that Aroldis Chapman could be the number one closer for a lot of people when he was a Red, which they knew the Reds were going to be bad, but he was still the number one closer. So you were taking him because of his peripherals. Okay, but now we're supposed to move Wade Davis way up because he's a Cub and he's on a really good team, even though the performance doesn't indicate that. So, you know, I don't understand it. People can't have it both ways. They can't say, well, you don't have to be on a really good team to get save opportunities, and then all of a sudden say, oh, well, I'm going to move this guy way up because he's going to a good team, so he'll probably get plenty of save opportunities. The two things don't jive with me at all. And like I said, the one thing I want is I want stability and a good idea of what's going on. And I just want to mention that the Chicago Cubs are about as disloyal to their closers as any team in Major League Baseball. You know, Hector Rondon has gotten jick-jacked around for 2 years despite the fact that he was pitching pretty well. Then they traded off for Aroldis Chapman. Then they said bye to him after the season was over. I don't think there's any particular loyalty here to Wade Davis. And it wouldn't stun me at all, you know, if he goes through a mildly bad stretch. It almost seems like Joe Maddon is looking for reasons to switch closers. And so I'm failing to see where this draft hype around Wade Davis is actually coming from. If he was going as a, you know, the back end of the, you know, of the 20s kind of guy, you know, 6-7 closers past Kelvin Herrera, I would understand it. But I'm ultra lost when it comes to Wade Davis's draft value. Where are you on Wade Davis this year, Darius? Are you as pessimistic as I?
I don't know if I'm that pessimistic, just because I think you really got to the bottom of where you could be with the pessimism. But I'll be honest, I think if you hadn't picked Davis, I would have done, just because I think the company that he's going in, it really doesn't make sense. People are drafting him almost like he's the guy that we saw back in 2014, 2015. And I know the ERA was low last year, but the peripherals didn't match. And I think while the injury played into that, we haven't really got any confirmation that he's fully over that. This spring has not got off to a good start, and I don't care about his numbers, but he hasn't really looked like he's rounded back into that form yet. So I think there's a few concerns remaining there. And I just think, yeah, he's kind of been drafted partly on the fact that he's on the Cubs and this is exciting, and partly as though he was the guy he was in 2015. And again, a bit like Hamels, he came out with a good ERA last year, even though his underlying stats did decline fairly precipitously. So I think Davis is definitely not a guy I'm going to be picking up anywhere near the top 100 where he's going now. And there are certainly way better values going all around him. I mentioned and Herrera, guys like Edwin Diaz are going behind Wade Davis at the moment. So I think this is definitely not a guy that I'll be picking up for my closer role.
Yeah. I mean, Ken Giles, who I realize, there's some issues going on there, but I can't imagine him going where he's going. It really stuns me. I expected a lot of helium on all of the Cubs. I've gotten rare instances of helium on the Cubs, and this is one area that I would have never suspected that we were going to get this kind of price inflation. So I would be absolutely somewhere between stunned and completely beside myself if I ended up with Wade Davis. It would have to be some form of an auction scenario where where the bottom just fell out of the price. I was price enforcing, and the room got really quiet after I made my bid. It would have to be that kind of a scenario before I would be all that excited about Wade Davis. He represents everything I do not like in drafting closers, which I'm a very risk-averse drafter in a lot of ways, including the injury issue and including the stability within the job. And Joe Madden, as a generality, scares the living heck out of me when it comes to trying to understand player roles. So since we ended up with a little extra time here today, I want to fire off a question at Darius, a man whose baseball acumen goes without question. So I'm sure I can fire this question at you. I have a pretty difficult, it turns into a listener question in a way, since I listen. I have to rank these three players. I don't think we've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about, and decide which of the three I'm going to keep, two of the three. And the three players are Andrew Benintendi, followed by Mr. Bregman from Houston, followed by Gene Segura, and they're all really on the cheap. And I was wondering if you were put in that scenario, if I'm overthinking this, that this is quite the quandary, or you think this is a pretty obvious scenario. So pick two out of the three and tell me why about Benintendi, Mr. Bregman, and Gene Segura.
Yeah, I certainly see the dilemma. I think for me, it would be Segura and Bregman. I really like Benintendi, and I have him on a couple of teams, and I'm certainly excited about his profile. I think he's a terrific hitter. I'm just not convinced that the stats are going to be there for a regular 5x5 league, especially not early on. I think there's a risk that he's kind of just underwhelming in home runs and steals, and maybe he gives you low double digits in both. I think Bregman, he's just as exciting, I think, if not more so. He's on a great offense and in a great park as well. So I just think he's got a really good amount of upside as well. It's not like Benintendi outstrips him there. And then I think Segura, we've just seen it more. He's obviously shown us how valuable he can be for fantasy. And while I don't think he's maybe as exciting as strange as that might sound for somebody who performed as well as he did last year, but I think there's probably more hype on Benintendi and Bregman. I think he is actually the safest option of the three in terms of the fact that we've seen a much longer track record from him.
Yeah, I you know, it's an oddity because as hyped as Bregman and Benintendi are, I really don't think anyone is touting them as exceptional in any one category. But at the same time, you have Segura, whose down years in stolen bases has still gotten him into the 20s. And so it seems pretty likely that you have some guarantee. People also seem to be warming up to the Seattle offense, which I actually do like their changes now that they've gotten Zarensic past the Jack Zarensic decision-making and piling up the corner infielder boulders in their lineup. Now that they've gotten away from that, I think there's more excitement about exactly what is going to happen there. I'm also I want to throw one more question at you, Darius. I know we're not really a current events kind of podcast for the most part, but I want to throw this into you. I saw a report the other day that the Royals are leaning towards Raul Mondesi Jr. not only making the roster, but being their leadoff guy to start the season most of the time, which I think would surprise some people, and it sort of works against some of the players with options left and that don't have options left on that Kansas City roster. What would you think of Raul Mondesi if he were to land that starting gig, as people are rumoring right now?
Yeah, I'd be pretty interested. I think there's upside for a pretty decent amount of speed. I think he can post a good average, and probably, although he's not going to get many walks, I think he should score a decent amount of runs. I don't think that the Kansas City lineup is the best, but I think if he's going to bat lead off there and get the playing time, then that's a kind of guy you almost have to consider, unless the rest of the team is just absolutely nothing. I'd be pretty interested in Mondesi. I'd just be aware that he's 21 and there could be a lot of growing pains here, and he obviously struggled quite a bit in very limited time last year. He only hit 185, so I think he's the kind of guy that certainly late in the draft, so I'd love to take a shot on, and maybe he could be a guy who could produce something similar to someone we mentioned earlier, Elvis Andrus, nowhere near the cost.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the big concern here would be batting average. At the same time, with where he's going, and especially if you're drafting here in the next week or so, and you get to the point where the end game flyers are rolling in your drafts. I mean, we're certainly prone to being in larger drafts, that he's somebody that you could take with a reserve pick or you could take late in the draft, and you could say, well, you know, if he plays regularly for a month and a half, he could steal 15 bases quite easily. He's gone through various stretches in his career where he's basically a steal a game type of player. So there is that to like about him, and I think he's someone that, depending on the education level, or if someone has seen these reports yet, that you could get relatively cheaply here in the week or so moving forward. Once he gets announced as the starter, then you'll see the price go up. But you know, he's not exactly competing. He's not competing with Roberto Alomar for the gig by any means. I mean, Whit Merrifield, I think all of us would think that Chesler Cuthbert would be a bit out of position if he was playing second base regularly. And, so it would be very ironic to me if they got a lot of good play on the cheap out of Raul Mondesi Jr. when they're still paying a ton of money for Omar Infante to basically lounge around and probably not make the roster in Detroit. But that does happen in this day and age for baseball, that is for sure. Darius, you are a busy human being doing lots of interesting stuff, and you're a great follow on Twitter. So why don't you both unload your Twitter following on us and tell us about the next pedantic venture that you are on.
I quite like that pedantic venture, yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I do have a lot of things going on at a lot of different places, so probably the easiest way to find them is to look at my Twitter feed. But a couple of things, interesting things that people might like. I recently wrote a piece at Banished to the Pen about a guy who pitched in the 30s and 40s called Boom Boom Beck. And it was featured on Eric Roseberry's On Baseball Writing podcast, in which two esteemed writers and editors, Patrick Dubuque and Jason Wojciechowski, actually edited the piece live on air, which was a super weird experience for me. But I think it's really helpful for both writers and editors alike. So I'd encourage everybody to go and check out Eric's podcast and just check it out generally, because it really is excellent if you want to get into baseball writing. It's just called On Baseball Writing, and he's been doing a great job talking to a lot of really good writers about the game. The other thing that we've got going on at the moment over at Banished to the Pen is our annual Wild Four tournament. We sort of run this alongside the March Madness, and it's kind of, if you're an effectively wild listener, we actually pit sort of various memes and themes of the show up against each other. So it's sort of a fun little competition where we kind of link back to some of the best moments of the show. And that's in the first round at the moment, so you can go over to the site and vote on that.
Well, you know that Effectively Wild podcast, putting out like a half an hour podcast every single day, basically 20 minutes to half an hour at least, is such a dynamic and energetic venture. They certainly put out some pretty decent content, considering that they have to be churning it out every single day. So I've spent large stretches of time listening to that podcast, and it's nice to have a group that is willing to put out that much and constantly about baseball, because the rest of the sports world, to be honest, sort of turns my stomach a lot of the time. So I thank them for that. And the Banished to the Pen stuff is an incredible group. I do follow the stuff. I've been invited into it, and yet it's hard for me to chime in fast enough, because they have such an excellent group of contributors there that by the time an idea pops up and I think about it for a little while, I go back and it seems like the stuff is already covered by other people. So I've turned into more of an observer than a contributor. But I would suggest to everyone out there that if you like pedantic, which is suddenly the word of the podcast, if you like pedantic ventures, Banished to the Pen is about as good as it gets. I remember there was a publication, and I don't know if it's out anymore, called Elysian Fields Quarterly. And back in the day, before we had all this this mega media that we have now, Elysian Fields Quarterly was this kind of thing, stuff that you had not thought about, philosophical stuff about baseball, not only metric oriented, but very philosophical oriented look at the game. So there is a ton of good stuff out there for you guys right now, and it is a great time to be a baseball fan between the WBC and all of the various podcasting outlets that are going on for us. All right, I am Chuck Anderson, and I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. Seems like I don't do quite as much as the other people on the staff, but I try to help them out where I can, and I try to chime in and put some articles out there for you guys as well. So I'll just keep hard at it. And I would definitely want to wish Justin a happy vacation. Seems like he has some well-deserved time away with his wife. They've got a lot going on personally, and it seems like everything is going well for them. So I'm excited for them. And fortunately for me, I'll be able to meet Evan, and I'm going to be able to meet Darius finally in person this summer. So I'm excited about how everything is going, and excited about being able to give you guys content throughout this coming season. So this is episode high 230s, and we are zipping off the air for you guys, but we'll be back again next week, and we'll have our fearless leader with us again. So thank you very much for the listen. Give us a review somewhere that you listen to us on, and that will make us very happy. You can send a pic of it off to Mr. Justin, and he's got prizes and stuff in the works for people who give us the review that we deserve, because we do put in a lot of good work for you guys. So even if you don't like my off-the-wall opinions, these other guys I work with are pretty good guys. So ignore me and listen to them if you need to. But thank you so much for the listen. Have a good one, everyone.